episode of The Rule of Three. I'm Brian Miller here with Tim Slagle.
Hey.
And going to do kind of an update on a story that we did of sorts a couple of weeks ago. The Acme Comedy Company's fight with the land developer and the city council to reasonably develop this area so that there's still enough parking to be able to go to Acme and the various businesses around.
Yeah.
Didn't work out great.
Parking in the North Loop is getting as rare as affordable housing.
Yeah, and you know it's funny. Just a few days after the city council meeting, where they went ahead and approved this big, I think pretty short-sighted development across the street from Acme without doing anything to consider the parking for the businesses or even that area. Yeah, the businesses around. Andrew Lee, our friend Andrew from the Up and Adam show, took his kids to his nephew and niece to a baseball game, and they drove down, and all the parking ramps were full, and he drove around for 45 minutes looking for a parking spot anywhere in the near vicinity of the Twin Stadium. Couldn't find one. It got to be the fourth inning.
You know what? He should have just gone to the mall and got on the train.
Yeah, he should just drive all the way back to the mall, hop on the light rail, ride the
You know, that would have only taken 45 minutes.
Yeah, about an hour and a half, actually.
What was he thinking? And the irony was, isn't that where the ballpark used to be?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it is. Yeah, a lot of parking in Bloomington, by the way. I mean, there's a ballpark there was a long time ago, but yeah. So there was an interesting update on so Jacob Fry. I had a conversation with him when I was at City Hall. And he said, well, you know, we just don't need parking. He said he without quite coming out and saying it out loud, said that it is in the city of Minneapolis's plans to just decrease the amount of parking and that they want to decrease the available parking to, I guess the word would be force, certainly not the word he used, force people to use other forms of transportation. I mean, it's basically
guessing,
like really clumsy social engineering.
I am guessing he used the word encourage.
Encourage. Yeah, I'm sure he used the word encourage. But of course, when you have no other options, encouragement kind of becomes force, right?
Yes. We are encouraging children in Somalia to eat more beans and rice.
Yes, yes. And there's an inmate in Florida who's being encouraged to walk down a hallway into a chamber where he will no longer live any longer. A lot of encouragement going on around here. And what he said to me was, well, you know, this is really a generational thing. You know, people in their 20s want to use other kinds of transportation. They don't want cars. They want, you know, bikes and bike paths and transit. And I said to him, it is a generational thing. And when this generation is not 23 but is 33, they and have a kid or two, they too shall want to take a car. you know, and he didn't really have an answer to that. I came away from my meeting with Jacob Fry profoundly unsatisfied. And then, lo and behold, I see.
Before we get to the lo and behold, how old is this guy?
You know what? That's a good question. If I had to eyeball him, I'd say later 30s. He seemed a couple of years older than me.
Huh.
You really, to hang out with him is really to hang out with Tommy Carchetti from The Wire.
I have no idea what that means.
He was the kind of, not even crooked, just the prevaricating, super slippery, ultimately harmful, ambitious politician from the TV show The Wire.
So he's older than you.
As far as I can, yes.
And he's suggesting that you're just too old to understand.
yeah, basically, I think so.
You know, it sounds more like a flame of eternal, you know, a delusion of eternal youth that would be more appropriate in Silicon Valley or Eastbound and Down.
Yeah,
than actually being slippery. Wow. It just astounds me, these bicycle anarchists. That they really think that people are going to enjoy bicycle. You know, it's kind of like kids in high school going, "We're never going to change, man. We're always going."
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing. I think if it's great when people want to bike, and then, you know, I think it's good for the environment. It's good for their health, And I'm fine with it. I
would remind Mr. Fry, it's Minnesota.
Yes, I said that myself. I said, you know, and I've said it as well. Like I like the light rail. I use public transit as often as I can. I just like to walk. I'm a big walker. And when the weather is reasonable, that is what I do when I can. Although for me to walk to Acme. I mean, for me, I live in a pretty major part of the city, and for me to take public transit to Acme would probably take me about an hour and 15 minutes to get there, versus about 12 minutes in my car.
How far of a walk?
I'm not talking about walking.
If you were to walk, how long would it be?
Oh, if I were to walk to Acme, I would say probably. Well, you know what? Let's say it would be 50 minutes by public transit and an hour and 30 minutes walking. Okay. At a really brisk pace.
Okay.
Maybe more like an hour 45 walk. I walk fast.
So it's about the same. Really? About the same. Public transit is about the same as walking.
It's not so far off in this particular case, because the light rail only runs in essentially a cross pattern. And by the way, for me to get to – even if once I got to the light rail – the last light rail stop at the end of the line, I would still have a half mile walk to get to Acme at the end of that light rail stop. So I'd have to get to the light rail from here by bus, or I suppose I could figure out a chain of buses that might only take me 40 minutes, possibly. you know, this is not Chicago, where you can, in a lot of times, pretty reasonably get much, much quicker to your destination by train.
Well, even though I don't know anyone in Chicago who can afford a car that doesn't have a car.
Yeah, that's true. That's an interesting point.
It's like I know a lot of people with cars that take public transit, you know, and if you're going somewhere near where the public transit is, it's great. But even the rich people who are on public transit still have that car stashed in the parking garage underneath their apartment to drive out to the summer home.
Right. Yeah. Or in our case, you know, if you're a comedian and you work in the Midwest, you have to have a car.
Well, no, that's when I moved to Chicago. That's what I loved about Chicago, was when I was not on the road, I would park my car, had a parking place, had to pay for parking. But I would park my car in my parking place and I wouldn't touch it until I was going back on the road. And that was, I loved that.
If my wife and I lived in Chicago, we'd probably get away with having one car. And that would be cool, instead of our two. I would like that. Actually, I like public transit. I'm not opposed to it, but at all. But, geez, it's Minnesota. We don't have the greatest transit system, you know. So we were talking about, it's Jacob Fry's utopia, you know. He has this notion that he can just transform, not just him, but a lot of people in the city government, but he's a big leader of this, is that you can just transform the city through magical thinking and the kind of social engineering that has really never proven very effective. So, lo and behold, this story pops up today on the news that one that I'd forgotten about and that Jacob Fry was involved in. What one old former city council member in Minneapolis labeled, quote, the worst development deal in the history of Minneapolis.
I think Fry is more appropriate than Frey, because it sounds like there's been youthful substance abuse involved.
Or he's going to fray the fabric of the community until it means nothing.
I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Vikings are building across the new Viking Stadium. The city decides they want to put the downtown East Common parks. The park board says, wow, this is going to be expensive and hard to maintain and a disaster, and we want nothing to do with it. The city then gets into the park business for the first time. Jacob Fry called this park the kitchen table for our city, which I find a baffling metaphor for a park. My only suspicion is that I think I told you I just assume he, because of his policies, will all soon be homeless and eating outside. And the park is where we told him to do it.
Not just eating outside, grazing.
Yes, yeah.
Because, you know, when a population starves, grass becomes edible.
Yeah. Get this. Minneapolis taxpayers now own the commons, recently paying $20 million to developer Ryan Cause. The park will be run by a nonprofit group created by the downtown council, And they don't have the money to maintain the park, which the park board estimated would be $2 to $3 million a year.
Oh my gosh. Is that, what is in there that's going to, is that just mowing and cleaning the
graffiti removal, trash, I assume, having to pay, increased, police or security presence to some degree at times. I wondered that myself. That's like, wow, that's pretty expensive for a plot of land nobody's doing anything in.
Right. Is he thinking that it's going to be a tailgate facility for bicyclers?
That's a great question. I mean, I've not really understood exactly why this park is why people want this park so badly. I mean, Minneapolis is a lovely park system, and I love all the green space here, but I just don't know that we need it at the intersection of football stadium and interstate. to me that doesn't scream park. So Jacob Frey's Utopia continuing to do a number on the taxpayers and business people of Minneapolis. And speaking of doing a number, we've just about done our number for this segment. So
see you next.
And in the pop culture news here with Rule of Three, only one thing anybody's been talking about other than whether or not the female Ghostbusters are the greatest and most liberating thing in the world, or whether it's the destruction of all entertainment as we know it. It's sort of a tangent, but I can't wait to not see that Ghostbusters movie, which will be another mediocre remake that neither propels womankind
honestly,
forward.
You're not going to see it?
Actually, I probably will because I'll have to review it.
Here's the thing. From your standpoint, you're gonna be one of the few people to review it. I mean, people are so adamantly boycotting it.
They're either adamantly boycotting it or pre-praising it. That's what drives me crazy. It's like it's probably just gonna be a boring summer movie. You know? That's my thought. But anyway, it's a little mini segment.
I don't remember Ghostbusters being that groundbreaking or revolutionary. It was just
one of my favorite movies of that's probably my top five all time favorite movies as a kid.
Ding 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 ding. Exactly.
Right. Oh no, it was I love it. I still watch it every couple of years, but I just don't.
Where did you watch it? Do you have fond memories of that first time you watched it? Did you maybe go to the drive-in to see it?
No, I just saw it on HBO and was like, "This is so cool! I love ghosts and Ghostbusters, okay. Jaws." I was never a Star Wars kid. I was really into Ghostbusters and Jaws and Indiana Jones.
Okay.
But I just don't. I don't enjoy seeing my childhood rehashed constantly, and I don't understand people that need that. And speaking of childhood rehashes, ooh, accidental segue. Probably the 5 years younger than me crew would have been maybe 6 or 7 years younger than me would have been very into Pokemon as children. To be honest, I know it's a game of some. I think it's a game. I think it was a card game.
It was
a cartoon.
Genius. It was pure genius. It was a cartoon.
Right.
It was a card game.
Yeah.
And it was a collectible.
Sure. There was some notion of the, like, you could collect them all was, like, the literally, like, the slogan of the cartoon, right? Like, because in the cartoon, he had to collect Pokemon.
Yeah.
Or something. And so then if you want
Pokemon,
to be like your
Pokemon
cartoon.
Is plural.
Oh, okay. So then.
Well, I think it's plural and singular. I think it's a Pokemon or several Pokemon.
Oh, you're way hipper to this than I am.
I tried. As a comic, I feel that I should always be aware of what's going on.
Ooh, speaking of segues, boy, that was a Freudian slip. Talk about not being aware of what's going on. So are you familiar with the Pokemon Go game?
Absolutely.
I didn't know until I kind of didn't understand it until yesterday when I went to have lunch with my family and I saw I guess I call my brother-in-law's girlfriend, but they've been together for years. I kind of think of her as my sister-in-law. She's great. So my pseudo sister-in-law.
Brother-in-law. Okay. So your wife's
My wife's brother's girlfriend. Girlfriend. Of
Got
many
it.
Years.
Okay.
Who's a lovely, lovely lady. Very great. She's a teacher. Awesome lady. Teaches autistic kids. And we were all going to meet for lunch, and we were, my wife and I drove past on the way to the restaurant, and I said, oh, there was Therese. I guess she's not going to mind if I say her name. It's like, oh, there was Therese on the corner there. And so we went back to, walk in with the restaurant with her, and Therese was kind of like, at first I thought something was wrong. She was like walking around in a daze, looking at her phone, like not heading our direction. And then we were like, hey, Therese. And she's like, oh, hey, geez, oh, there you guys are. And she's like, oh, sorry, I was catching Pokemon. And she was wandering around. You wander around this with this game. You have to get outside.
Uh-huh.
And you wander around to public spaces, and the game is like built into your GPS.
Right.
It's called Augmented Reality is the name of the game, which I'm old enough to remember when Augmented Reality was just called lying.
It's kind of interesting. There was a William Gibson book about this. I forget which one.
Oh.
And basically there was a person who would do art installations that you could only see if you had VR glasses. You would put on VR glasses, and they would be virtual art installations that would be in certain places around the globe, and you could put on the VR glasses and then see the installation. And it was totally in cyberspace, but it would overlay. And so this idea, it's fascinating to me, this idea of Pokemon characters walking around in an alternate reality that you can only see when you hold up your phone.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're animated, if they're actually running.
Yeah, they move around.
Huh.
And so then, there's this, so you get the Pokemon or something, you find it, and then if you want to catch it or something, then you have to go to your camera phone. There was something Therese had to do to switch on her phone and then point it. You have to point your camera right at the thing and click the button so you, like, shoot this fireball, which, like, captures it or something. But yeah. It is a fully immersive experience. And it's fully immersive experience as long as you don't look up for your phone. And that seems to be the case. There's been the first report of – I just saw on CNN today of Pokemon-related robberies. You can use the game to see where other people are Pokemoning. So some guys in O'Fallon, near where my parents live, on the Missouri border of Illinois, decided they would just find some fairly abandoned urban areas. They would see who was playing Pokemon in those areas, and they just drove up to them and robbed them and kept on going. They got eight people that way.
Oh. That's funny. There's again bringing him up in two segments. Andrew Lee had a meme on his wall that cracked me up. It was a suspicious looking van,
mm-hmm.
and on the side it said "Rare Pokemon Inside," and the caption was "How to Abduct a 28-year-old Male."
That's funny. That is very funny. And it is this interesting nexus of, like,
I'm sorry.
Nostalgiaphilia. That's what we should start calling it. It's like necrophilia, but for your past entertainment. So this is like the nexus of new technology and nostalgiaphilia.
Well, I don't even know if that was intended. It seemed to me that it was probably intended for children, but for some reason it's. I don't know if children are playing it, but it's been adopted by people in their mid-20s who were 8 years old when the Pokemon craze was going on. And they still know all the Pokemon.
Oh, yeah.
They still know all. The only one I really remember besides Pikachu, which was of course, was the star.
The yellow guy, right?
Yeah, was Jigglypuff.
Isn't that Gabriel Iglesias' nickname? I'm not fat. I'm just Jigglypuff.
And Jigglypuff had such a beautiful singing voice that she would put people to sleep.
Ah.
Well, that's all I remember. That's all the further I got into it.
Yeah, I have no real knowledge of it. But yeah, it's pretty fascinating. I mean, I don't know. It sounds curmudgeonly, but I do. Do we need more reason to be in our phones and not in the real world? How little time are we spending in the world now?
Yeah, well, you know, it's the slow descent into the Matrix. I mean, how long before it becomes a VR game where the Pokemon show up in 3D, and that actually, because you actually see the reality that is there with the overlay, is that you could actually walk around all day with VR glasses on.
Like, looking, or even the Google glasses or something, you know, where you could set them where there's, like you say, you can actually see the real, quote-unquote, real reality, as well as the things. Yeah, you could run, chase them, get them yourself. Yeah?
Well, the VR glasses make more sense, because then, you know, because then you don't realize that you're walking into this big warehouse full of tubs full of gel with electrodes on them.
Oh, yeah, right.
you still think that you're in the U.S. Bank, the park adjacent to the U.S. Bank Stadium.
Yeah, that's going to be the one thing. Ooh, maybe. Ooh, I think we figured it out. That's how they make all their money back for that park, is they partner with the Pokemon and they put a bunch of super rare Pokemon in the park and they charge admittance.
It's, it's how I hope that the fad dies before people see the evil possibilities that exist.
It is grim. I don't know. I personally have been trying to take media breaks, go for walks, or just not have any music playing, no phone with me, just trying to like get in the interest, even if it was just 20, 30 minutes, just to like get a little contemplation time back or something, you know?
And that is the plus of it. It is even though they're staring at their phones, that it is getting people outside.
That's true. People are walking, at least. It's there is that. So it's a good thing. ... question mark.
And it's a good thing we're at the end of the segment.
Yeah. And on the last segment of the Rule of Three here this week, it is the dog days of summer. We're in the teeth of it, and I don't know about you, but I took a little summer vacation. I didn't go anywhere, but you know, as you know, when you're on the road, to me, vacation means not going somewhere.
Well, for other people, that would be called a staycation.
Yes, but since I'm always going, staying is the way to be, as far as I'm concerned. But I did something I've never done. Well. I've never done it for this long. I have not done stand-up comedy in now 15 days.
Wow.
It's the longest I've ever gone since I started without doing stand-up.
Wow. And what's unusual to me is that you're kind of saying it the way same way an alcoholic would brag about his two-week chip.
Yeah, I've got it. Well, and you know, it occurred to me that it was, in my mind, it was like, oh, man, I haven't done stand-up in 15 days. And I was on a radio show talking to and one of the other guests asked me, so how often do you do stand-up? And I said, well, you know, at that point I said, it's been like 6 days. It's been like the longest I've gone in a long time. And they're like, really? 6 days is the longest you've gone in a long time? I certainly haven't ever gone 2 weeks without doing it since I started. But I had a couple of weeks where I didn't have anything booked. It was the 4th of July. Only at Acme or someplace really nearby would I work on 4th of July week. It's such a terrible week to work that why subject yourself to it?
I actually did a couple good shows at Zany's Rosemont.
Oh, yeah, you did those anniversary shows, right?
Yeah.
And they were fun?
They actually were.
Well, yeah, you see my point, though. If I lived in Chicago, I would go to Zany's and do a show, you know?
Right.
But I'm not going to put all my crap in the car and drive 7 hours and stay in a hotel for 3 days over the holiday weekend while everyone else is having fun.
No.
To do a bunch of empty late Friday show kind of thing.
No, because you know. you go to those small town bar shows, and usually the reason why those shows are so great is because it's the middle of winter, mm-hmm. and in the town of 300, the 300 people are sick of looking at each other. They want a new face.
Yeah, and especially up in this part of the country, the comedy audiences really dwindle in the summer just because, you know, except they kind of maybe unnaturally swell a little bit in the winter. And in the summer, though, people want to get outside and, you know, you got to get it while you can. So I thought, well, it's a pretty good couple of weeks. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to not work for much, I was going to go to a couple open mics and this and that. I thought, just take a couple weeks. So I didn't write any jokes. I didn't tell any jokes. And it was great. And it was awesome. It turns out not working is really fun, by the way. I did a bunch of other work. But
I start to panic. If I go very long without working, I start to panic. I start to get a little nervous. I start to worry about my life.
Yep, I had a little bit of that. I had some existential moments here and there.
I have to do it. I have to, it's been my contention that comedy is closer to an addiction than a career choice.
Yeah,
I don't know if I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but it's if you look at people who are addicted to something and people who do comedy, you start to see some very similar behaviors, poverty, broken relationships, living in dumpy apartments where three or four other enablers.
Yeah,
driving long distances in the middle of the night to questionable neighborhoods for a quick fix.
And hanging out only with other people who have the same problem so that your problem starts to seem normal.
And there's also cross-addiction, too, because when you think of people – when I think of, like, people that have the eating disorders – you know, comics have the worst eating disorders. The fattest people I know are probably comics.
Yeah, or you know, obviously fairly high rates of alcoholism in comedy.
Alcoholism, drug abuse, gambling.
Yeah.
It's all the same kind of person.
Is astute.
And you know, it occurred to me that maybe I should go to a support group. And so I go, hi, my name is Tim. I'm addicted to comedy. And I did 45 minutes. Killed.
Can you imagine how quickly a support group of comics trying to quit comedy would just devolve into ball busting and uselessness?
Some of these open mics become very close to support groups.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Wow. That's true. Especially that, you know, there's... I'm not going to name any names or any mics for fear of harming the innocent or whatever, but you always know there are those mics or those shows, certainly in Minneapolis, where like it's kind of the same group that goes to that mic and they don't really work anywhere else. You know, there's some people who sort of just do comedy with no real.
And they get up and they say, hi, you know, I'm Tim Slagle. Mm-hmm. And I've now been doing comedy for 5 years today, my fifth anniversary. And everyone applauds.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, boy. But it's they're like support groups, but they're negative support. Because they laugh at stuff that civilian audiences wouldn't laugh, so rather than helping you quit comedy, it encourages you to go on.
Wow, that is a grim. I'll never look at a couple of mics the same way again. I have remember thinking about a couple of shows, thinking this is just group therapy for these people. I never see them anywhere else except for this show. You know, nobody works. Uh-huh. Or rather, they all work real jobs, you know, understandably, because they don't work at stand-up. And you watch the thing, and you're like, no one seems to be trying to get better at comedy, per se. You know, it's just...
Nope. What's it called? It's not recovery. What is it? What was it called? Those meetings? What's the word? Whatever. Mm. But that's called your lead. When you tell the story about the last time you drank, that's your lead. So that's essentially what
that's your opener.
Yeah, that's what the comics are doing. They're doing.
You know, maybe.
So I was in the basement when my mom walked in on me.
maybe the worst thing is to be kind of addicted to comedy, because maybe the people who don't really get better at it, the problem is they can just do a couple of open mics or a few open mics and scratch that itch. And because they don't need it so bad that they need to really reach for higher and higher, where actually at some point
they don't
need
to quit the job and put it all on the line.
Yeah, or there's got to be some middle ground of people whose frequent being out at night doing comedy keeps them from really focusing on a real job or, you know, a more successful, likely career track, but also I said, not quite that insane drive that's going to push them to get a, you know, good touring gig and a manager and an agent.
You're not angling for the promotion when you can't wait to 5 o'clock so you can catch the open mic in St. Cloud.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, which is fine if it's a stepping stone up to something else. Oh, well, it's fine if that's what you want to do. But I guess we're all on somewhere on this addiction spectrum, and it only works out differently at different sides of the spectrum, I suppose.
And the bottom line is there is nothing more sweet than the sound of applause.
Oh yeah, that's as natural a high as it gets for any social animal, right?
I will take that over almost anything.
Yeah, really, really killing is especially. Well, it's great for me because you can also drink while you do it, so you can totally overlap my two favorite addictions.
Well, I find for me is that I tend to overindulge with the booze mm-hmm. on the good shows rather than the bad shows.
100% agreed. 100%
which a lot of people wouldn't realize. You'd think, oh no, you bomb. You just wanna forget it as soon as possible. But it's not that at all. Is that it's kind of like the, you know, it's kind of the same reason why a Vicodin goes good with a cocktail. Is that a cocktail after you've just had a great set kind of stretches that buzz just a little bit longer.
Yeah, you're trying to maintain that high versus if I have a bad set, unless it's a, I did get pretty plowed after I had a bad draw at a festival a bit ago. But after a bad set, I it's funny. One time I had a kind of a bad set, and like my parents were there, and they were like, I don't know, I think they thought I was going to be all fragile or something, and I was like, hey, you guys ready to go to dinner? like what's up? I was like, oh, it's a bad set. Well, do another one tomorrow.
Do you need to talk, Brian?
it's like no, I just did for 30 minutes and people didn't like it. I probably should stop for a while. But
and
yeah, it's like once you've done a few thousand sets, speaking of stopping. No, oh, right. So
I
we
hate
are.
To, I hate to say it. I think that's the end of the segment.
Yes, and I'm going to get back to the addiction tonight. So,
me too.
Yep.
Me too. I'll be at Zanies.
If
you want to, all the podcasts are now on iTunes. I think we announced
that
last week.
The iTunes. They're going to put that on my Facebook and whatnot.
Yeah, you can just do a search on iTunes, and they're all there. But you still might want to visit timslegel.com.
Yep. Or BrianMillerComedy.com or Real Brian Miller on Twitter. I'm trying to get my Twitter numbers up.
Okay.
That's why I took my 2 weeks to decide.
Yeah, I'll work on my Twitter. and Twitter is what you did for 2 weeks.
Yeah, kind of. Better than Pokemon Going.
See you next week.
Maybe not, actually. See you next week.